Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Episode of the Vinnie East Show, the show where the music never stops and the technical difficulties are a plague and the light of this world seems to shrink and vanish into some description of deep underground New Zealand-based bunker full of, you know, scary Nazi zombies who incidentally, you know, happened to be genetically engineered and invaded this country long, long ago. And are now ahead of the parliament. Now, my very special guest is James Bartlett, who is an alien abductee. He's exposed high levels of spiritual warfare, but nevertheless retains a positive, upbeat outlook on life, so he's a good fit for the show. He's an independent historian specializing in military history with an emphasis on intelligence, counterintelligence, and special operations. Now, one people might think that military intelligence is an oxymoron. James has studied the development of the intelligence and security apparatus, which is spawned by the Second World War and the OSS. And I always found funny how the OSS was just basically a couple of serpents and an all-seeing eye kind of logo. That was very interesting. It's like, that doesn't look like the Illuminati trying to take control of the United States and the Department of Defense at all, does it? No, not at all. Kind of like the MI5 and MI6 logos, which are basically just a pyramid all-seeing eye. And now, he's lectured in a number of places, including Memphis, Tennessee, and the state of Mississippi, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, San Diego, California, at the UFO Friendship Campouts near Area 51. Manning a sniper rifle, just in case anybody from the security forces comes and blows his head off. Las Vegas, Nevada, and Roswell, New Mexico, and just to name a few. He's also co-facilitated alien abduction and a MILAB, military abductions, support groups in San Diego, California, and in the high desert of Southern California. And he lived in notorious UFO hotspots in Southern and Northern California and the Tri-States region where Cali, Arizona, and Nevada meet. And is also a co-author along the way with many other noted researchers in a series of books called The Universal Seduction, which Barack Obama is a good follower of. That's why he managed to universally seduce everybody in the United States. And you think that they may be under some form of mind control when they suddenly seem to go mad. You know, have you noticed that the whole country seems to be going absolutely mad, and crimes just keep getting committed all the time. That are just like, what? You know, cutting your baby's limbs off, things like that. There's some real weird stuff going down in the United States, man. You know, personally, I blame the SSRI drugs, but I... James, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, with such a vast array of knowledge and interest in all of this, I'd love to hear your personal story of how this actually started all happening for you, your abduction story and what have you. Were you in the military? What?
I was a Navy brat, so I followed my parents from one naval air station to another. I basically grew up in a military family, and as a result, I was subjected at an early age to the Republican brainwashing, i.e. that everything that the Big Brother does is for the good, and basically we're always on the right side, and there's always a good reason to intervene in this, that, or the other country. And I basically fell along with that, but all the same, I was conducting my own research in ancient history, mythology, military history. I always had an interest in UFOs. And over the years, beginning at an early age, I always had unusual experiences, psychic phenomena, UFO sightings, what I later realized were alien abduction encounters, both in full waking consciousness and in the astral dreamscape, astral abductions. And I thought that it was normal. I thought that everyone had such experiences, and I was quite surprised later to find out that that wasn't the case, or at least that people may have been having them, just not talking about them. So I learned early on that all is not as it seems. Ironically, what woke me up out of my stupor and shunted me out of the false left-right paradigm was a series of alien abductions in 1990 after I had returned from Germany. I'd spent the summer in Germany. And as a result, I began going to UFO conferences, and sitting on a table was a heap of books. And I sidled over to the table, looked down. The first book I saw was Shadows of Power about the Council on Foreign Relations. I flipped through the book and I noticed, gee, all these Republicans and Democrats seem to be part of the Council on Foreign Relations. This explains everything. This is why nothing ever changes and things get progressively worse, because they all seem to be in on this globalist agenda.
And I believe that's why they call themselves progressives.
That's right. They progressively and gradually take away everyone's rights and gradually and progressively attain more power.
Can you think at any point that they've passed the law to give you more rights?
Well, that's what I try to tell people is, you would think once in a while the ball would bounce in our direction. Some piece of legislation would slip through the cracks and they would like just leave us alone in some little small segment of our lives. But of course, that's never the case. It's full spectrum dominance. The food is tainted. The air we breathe is chem sprayed, fluoridation, the lot. It's full spectrum dominance. It's all out assaults on the human immune system, on the DNA, and on our very souls, which is what I'm here to talk about. So as far as learning what I call the surface level manipulation was all about, surface level, i.e. the outward manifestations of the reptilian overlordship, which people refer to as the New World Order, Illuminati, so on and so forth, that book, Shadows of Power, really opened my eyes. And then from there, I realized, well, there are really no good guys or bad guys. These are opposames, as David Icke calls them. There is no difference. It's an illusion of choice. And it's ironic, and I tell people, well, I woke up to the New World Order because aliens are abducting me. That's how that came along.
Yeah. Well, I find it's amazing how many different ways you can wake up to the New World Order, because the New World Order controls everything.
This is true. It's all pervasive.
Mm. How do you overthrow something that is holding up everything?
Well, what I encourage people to look into is the deeper aspects of all this. This is why I do handstands and I, you know, jump for joy when I hear David Icke talk about the nature of consciousness and how this controlling factor is intentionally muting consciousness to the point where so many people are feeble-minded and slow-witted. And there is more to the New World Order. I mean, the symbology that's all around us hints at something much deeper and darker. What these entities have done is they have worked through, by genetic intervention, these ruling hybrid bloodlines, which I call the David Icke hypothesis, because he popularized the whole concept. Although many of us knew this was going on, no one could have done a better job than David Icke putting it out to the masses. These reptilian entities have infiltrated the human race. They've corrupted the gene pool through genetic manipulation. They've imbued their loathsome characteristics of aggression, territoriality, sadism, so on and so forth, into large masses of the gene pool. And through these elite hybrid bloodlines, who are essentially the plantation managers of this planet, they've imposed all these changes and all these laws, and at the same time, they've muted human consciousness through their educational system, through the general dumbing down process, fluoride vaccines, so on and so forth. And I encourage people to look at the bigger picture, because if one were to omit UFOs and non-human intelligences from a study of the New World Order, they are omitting the key facet of it. It is, for one thing, it's non-scientific, because these forces, these intelligences have been with us all along. It's reflected in the art. It's reflected in ancient texts, in literature. So to just dismiss out of hand all any suggestion that there's a non-human intelligence behind all this is not only non-scientific, it's non-historical. And once again, these same ruling bloodlines have controlled the education system. So by and large, people don't know the history of this planet. They don't know the history of the human race. They don't know that the humans have been around for a very long time. Forbidden Archaeology by Michael Cremo and Richard Thompson, absolute must reading. What's happening now is the reptilian overlords are shooting for the works. They're pulling out all the stops because they know that they are working against a celestial timetable. These cataclysms, celestially driven cataclysms, are cyclical. They come around every 12,500 years thereabouts. The reptilian overlords and their hybrid minions, who are the plantation managers, know we are on the cusp of all these radical earth changes, and they are getting their control grid in place. They've been working on depopulation for some time. They know there will be a mass culling and a consequent release of many souls, because once again, that's what this is all about, souls and DNA. And they're getting everything in place. And it's important for us to realize that it's more than just power-mad bankers and industrialists and financiers we're up against, that there is a malign influence working through the top levels of the elite, as well as a lot of their middle-level and lower-level minions. But ultimately,
is there anything,
this agenda...
Is there anything above that? You know, like people have talked about these archons, reptilian entities, aliens, and so on and so forth. Is there anything above them, I wonder?
Yes. Yes, there is. When I think of the term archons, the Gnostic description of these malign influences, I see it kind of as an umbrella catch-all term. Different types of negative ETs are part of this archontic influence, as are the reptilians. There are snake entities that not many people know exist, and these snake entities take up other entities as hosts. They take up reptilians as hosts. They take up mantis beings as hosts. They take up human beings as hosts. So it's parasites within parasites within parasites. These archontic beings are essentially parasitic in nature. It is all about energetic harvesting. It is a frequency war. We humans are resonators. We emit frequencies, and it behooves these archontic negative beings to keep us at a low vibratory ebb, a low negative frequency, and they do this constantly by bombarding us with
sex,
mass media,
drugs,
entrainment,
rock and roll,
BS, sex, drugs, the fear, and one of the key facets of control was shunting us from the right hemisphere to the left hemisphere of our brain. We must regain that balance between masculine and feminine. What happened in a nutshell was, after the most recent series of cataclysms 12,500 years ago, if you're familiar with Dr. Paul Laviolette's work, the galactic superwave emanating from the galactic center. We're in alignment with the galactic center again, the dark rift, as the Maya call it. And the tail end of that came the passage of one or more very large comets. And if you're familiar with Dr. James McCanney's work, the plasma comet discharge model, we don't have to be hit by these comets. They emit tremendous electrical discharges. They push before them a large gravitational wave. So long story short, after the Earth settled into its new axis and the survivors came out of the caves, these reptilian entities took the opportunity of genetically manipulating the smaller group of surviving humans. Most, if not all, of the advanced human and alien civilizations that were on the surface of the Earth, and remember, the Egyptians talk about how their civilization is actually 36,000 years old. It was a legacy. There were no more of these advanced civilizations on the surface to contend with, because it either left, went underground, or got destroyed. Atlantis is an example. So there was a smaller group of surviving humans, which they then genetically manipulated. And then in the process, they also foisted these harsh patriarchal monotheistic religions. They imposed alphabet languages, symbol languages, which shunted us from the right symbolic intuitive side to the left side. And with alphabet language come scribes, come laws, come a form of control which can be passed down generationally. And so that brings us up to the present, where you have these people that pass out of university that are just complete dolts and really don't know which way is up. And people that are shunted into the left hemisphere brain can be made to do and believe anything. They can be made to hate. The easiest thing to do is to make people in large numbers hate or fear anything. And so it's a vibratory ebb of fear, anger, hatred that's being pumped into us constantly. A fear of want, of austerity, a fear of starvation, artificial scarcity, the whole bit. And so David Icke talks about this a lot. So we are constantly on the defensive. And when we are in this low vibratory ebb, individually and as a society, it makes it much easier for these archontic beings to parasitically feed off of us.
Yeah, okay, well, we're coming up to a break very shortly here. You know, it occurs to me, Voltaire once said, if people can make you believe absurdities, they can make you commit atrocities. And you have a look around at the world, it's pretty atrocious. We'll be right back with James Bartley, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere. Back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And you can also listen live on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. There's a little play button somewhere on there. And I encourage people to listen to the show live. If you're in New Zealand, 10 a.m. is the time we go live, baby. Oh, yes. And after this show today as well, I'll be going on Janice Barcello's show on, I think, another network. I forget which. I don't know. I'll update you as time goes on. And my very special guest is James Bartley. And I was wondering, whereabouts were you born, mate?
Well, I was born at Subic Bay Naval Base in the Republic of the Philippines. My dad was a Navy guy and eventually moved to Texas, California for a long time, eventually moved to Arizona. So most of my time I was living in California, Northern and especially Southern California. And that's what allowed me to go to all these places like the high desert of Southern California. There's a lot of UFO, reptilian, military activity. It's a prime place to live, to see all this activity.
And do you believe the military has been working with these entities?
Yes, absolutely, because there were two parallel streams at work. You have the ancient fraternal orders, which were kind of offshoot of the astronomer priest who probably, at least some of them, with good intentions, tried to bring forward the ancient stellar wisdom after this latest series of cataclysms. They're the ones that put all the megalithic sites up over a lot of the ley line, dragon line vortexes, so on and so forth. A lot of those temples, as you know, they're built right above ley lines. So there is probably a sincere effort to bring forth some of this knowledge into the future. But what happened, as in so many other cases, is these elite reptilian bloodlines essentially took over a lot of these fraternal orders. And so all along, within the highest levels of these fraternal orders, there was an understanding that there were non-human intelligences at work, working through them. There was always the means to interact with non-human intelligence, whether they were subterranean, whether extraterrestrial, whether they were interdimensional. I must say at this point that there has been efforts to create fault lines in UFO research. Jacques Vallée was a past master of this. He was saying, oh no, there's no such thing as extraterrestrials. It's all interdimensional. But when one has an understanding of what mystics, seers, adepts, yogis, so on and so forth have said for ages, the ether, an understanding of the ether, then you will know that there is no difference between interdimensional and extraterrestrial. Some entities are both. It's all about frequency and resonance, as Tesla said. Nowadays, physicists contort themselves in all kinds of uncomfortable positions to avoid saying that five-letter word, the ether. They use words like quantum entanglement, quantum non-locality, action at a distance. But what they're really talking about is the ether. Anyone who has astral traveled knows that distance is instantaneous, whether they're remotely viewing or astral traveling towards a place on this plane or in another plane or another dimension. So I must point that out. There is no, with these advanced beings and with these spiritual beings, there is no division between here or there or other planes, and distances. So you had this underground stream of esoteric, occulted knowledge, ancient stellar wisdom. And when the crash retrievals began happening, most famously Roswell, but Roswell was not the first. It certainly wasn't the last. What happened was, there was a back engineering effort to understand the technology, the physics behind the technology. But all along, there was this occulted stream of wisdom where these adepts knew how to open portals. They knew how to astral travel. They knew how to remote view. They knew how to interact with non-human intelligence, both underground, extraterrestrial, and from other dimensions. And they merged with the back engineering effort to understand the technology and the physics behind the technology of these alien craft. What we have is a lot of these
what's difficult to me is a lot of people won't understand even the context in which we're thinking. I mean, they think remote viewing is watching television.
Yes, but there's always these older terms that decide what goes on now, like channeling used to be referred to as transmediumship in the spiritualist days. Some people say clairvoyance is a form of remote viewing. Well, what they've done in the military today and the intelligence community is they've taken these innate abilities that people have, because within human DNA are elements of DNA from not just one, but a number of different ET races. And the morphic resonance and spiritual ancestral memory has passed on from these other ET races through this DNA. And there is latent metaphysical abilities in this DNA. And so you have all these shamans and yogis with all these abilities. These abilities have existed all along. They're not unusual. It's just that we've been taught that such things are nonsense and don't exist. But of course, in these secret orders and also in the indigenous cultures, which they've tried very hard to wipe out, by the way, these kinds of abilities are the norm. So they've weaponized everything. They've weaponized remote viewing. They've weaponized astral travel. Mm-hmm. So getting back to your original point, the the technology that was recovered through these various crash retrievals went into the Deep Black special access programs. And out of that was created this hyper security state. Long before 9/11, there was this cosmic cover-up. And I must point out that the reason so many truthers in what I in the liberty movement, people who are only well versed in what I call surface level stuff, the reason they dismiss UFOs and extraterrestrials and whatnot out of hand is because they've been brainwashed. In 1953, the CIA convened the Robertson Panel, run by H.P. Robertson. He was a doctor who oversaw a lot of weapons exploitation programs derived from the, from recovering Nazi weaponry in World War II. And he put a panel together to deal with the subject of UFOs. 6 months before, in July 1952, Washington, D.C. was inundated with UFO sightings, which resulted in the largest post-war military press conference ever, where the Air Force tried to explain away all these sightings as temperature inversions. But this created mass hysteria. So 6 months later, the CIA convened the Robertson Panel, and the upshot of the Robertson Panel was we must minimize public interest, indeed hysteria, about this subject, because back then the media was much more forthcoming about UFO-related information. So the CIA instituted a program of debunking UFO sightings with paid quackademics, basically, and ridiculing the witnesses of UFO sightings with the media.
It's and become incredibly that, effective to the point where a qualified Navy pilot who has 50,000 hours flight time or whatever sees a cigar-shaped object that is hundreds of meters long flying alongside him. It's on radar, and he reports this, and the media says, and it's reflected light off of swamp gas or something. And the public are so easily mind-controlled that they believe it. Something so absurd as that.
Yes. And, you know, what's disappointing to me, and I think we're starting to see a sea change here, but what's disappointing to me is so many truthers, i.e., you know, people in the liberty movement, they fall right into that because we just love to ridicule people, don't we? We just love to laugh at someone at someone else's expense. Oh, look, the lonely, friendless kid is being bullied. Let's all laugh at him. Better thee than me, right? So,
I like to call people the word scum.
Well, I love your term scumbaggery, by the way. I'm going to use that if that's okay. What you have is all these truthers who have fallen right into this debunking and ridiculing mindset, throwaway lines like Project Bluebeam. No such project ever existed. The NSA and CIA weren't around thousands of years ago mind-controlling people into thinking they were having a religious mystical vision. Okay, that was all non-human inspired. That's how religions were formed, controlling custodial religions. One of the most important books ever written was Gods of Eden by William Bramley, because he goes through the whole history of the ET non-human influence throughout throughout conspiracy history. This is a subject which cannot be left out of the equation.
It's mind control,
art,
really.
Literature, it's mind control.
That's what religion was originally instituted in order to control the masses, control people's minds. And I came up with a realization yesterday, and I want to do this to a crowd of people. Everybody, raise your hands if you've never suspected that you are a mind control slave. And, you know, a couple of people will raise your hands. All right, now, everybody, you've now clearly identified the mind control slaves in your midst.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And custodial religions, as William Bramley calls that, custodial religions created by these non-human entities is where so much of this started, where so much of the strife and warfare and hatred has been carried forth through the ages. So that's what's happened is there was a merging of the Deep Black recovered technology, and also it's one of the reasons why Jacques Vallée, in my view, a disinformation artist, he wrote great books, Passport to Magonia, Dimensions, talking about how this non-human influence has been with us throughout history. But then he spun it out by saying, oh, there's no extraterrestrials, only interdimensional, because by doing so, he neatly sidesteps the hardware aspect of all this. Because Roswell, Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, 65, Aztec, New Mexico, 48, these were the actual crash retrievals of alien technology. And by sidestepping all that and saying it's all interdimensional, you neatly kind of blow off any suggestion that hardware actually exists. And so these aerospace corporations, that at one time there was only a handful of aircraft companies, all of which in the beginning were funded with seed money from the Rothschilds, incidentally. I mean, all of them, Lockheed, you name it. They were all originally financed, just like the railroads were financed, just like the steel industry in America was financed by the Rothschilds. So from the very beginning, this reptilian hybrid bloodline controlled what morphed into the aerospace corporations. And now the aerospace corporations are really in control of this technology. The military retrieves it initially with living and some dead and sometimes living ETs. And they do the initial analysis, but eventually, like everything else, it falls into the into private corporate hands. And then they make all these decisions on a grand scale. Now, Ben Rich is one of the most important eyewitnesses who's come forward. You probably know about this story, but for the benefit of your listeners who are not familiar with the story, Ben Rich was the late director of Lockheed Skunk Works, the advanced development division of Lockheed. They're the ones who create a lot of the so-called next generation craft, hypersonic vehicles, and especially craft based on electrogravitics, field propulsion, anti-gravity, much of it derived from a study and analysis of recovered alien craft. And Ben Rich, in what amounted to a deathbed confession, said, yes, UFOs exist, both man-made and ET-owned, and that the military have been traveling the stars for a long time, and that he said we have small fleets of these craft, which are based on ET technology. I would say we have large fleets of them, because I've seen many of these so-called alien replicated vehicles myself. And his statement about the military already traveling the stars, and that we have the ability to take ET home, he said that there was a fault in the equations. We made that correction, and now we understand everything. I'm paraphrasing. And he said something else that was very critically important, too. He said that the technology is based on ESP, that all time and space is one. This is exactly what seers, adepts, yogis, et cetera, have been saying for ages, that it all has to do with this interconnectedness. And we're all taught by the system that everything is all about separation, isolation, fear of the other, right? But there's an interconnectedness to all of it. Now, unfortunately, this technology and what Richard Dolan refers to as the breakaway civilization, where they literally are their own civilization with their own understanding of cosmology, their own understanding of real physics, they've kind of branched off. They suck in all this money and resources from the surface world, and they conduct all these operations. So not only fast forwarding to the present time, there is an ongoing interaction with deep black elements of the military aerospace community and non-human intelligences, because when they began developing all these underground bases, they realized, surprise, surprise, there are already civilizations and beings beneath the ground that have been there all along. The mining industry have known about these beings for a long time. In England, hundreds of years ago, they made people sign what amounted to non-disclosure statements when they were working in mining companies, in case they saw something weird and scary underground. So this has been going on all along.
Yeah, indeed. And what I find very interesting is that there's interconnections with so many different topics, entities, sensor technology, crowd control, that kind of thing. You know, one uses an anti-gravity device to escape the planet, while the other uses an anti-levity device to stop the protesters having fun with them. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Come gather around, people.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I was just thinking about this, you know, like the next generation of crowd control. They've got these sound cannons or whatever that scream out this, and then like all the protesters, you know, with their moth-eaten cardigans and their and V for Vendetta masks, you know, just like go down on the ground like, it's exploding my eardrum places. And, you know, I was just thinking about this. Bunch of cops roll in and their big thug-like gear and stuff like that. And they say to the crowd, "We have the moral authority here. We have the moral high ground." The whole crowd just starts laughing at them. And we have authority. You must obey us because authority must be obeyed. The whole crowd laughs at them again. And it's like, "Corporal, hit him with the anti-levity device." Suddenly it's not that funny anymore. You know, that'd be great. The anti-levity device crowd control weapon. It actually literally shoot people with a beam of something that stops them from enjoying themselves. Imagine the power. All right, a very special guest is James Bartley. What do you reckon? Do you reckon an anti-levity weapon would be, you know, one of the new methods of terrorism or something like that? You know.
Well, we've seen the inverse of that, where humor is used as a weapon. You look at the presidential primaries of 2008, how all the Republican mainliners were instructed whenever Ron Paul said anything, whenever Ron Paul said boo, right, they were all instructed just laugh hysterically, ha, 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 giggle, giggle, giggle. When Dennis Kucinich was mocked in a presidential a meeting, they mentioned that Kucinich had a UFO sighting, and right on cue, everybody laughed. Ha, ha, ha. It's the funniest thing. And so, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me that...
Did they call them mainliners because they're all freaking addicted to heroin?
Well, yeah, they're addicted to power, and some of them probably are druggies and smackies, I'm sure.
Think about the House of Congress. How many of these people are on psychoactive medications or something like that, you know, just sitting there amongst all of these other psychopaths who also can't think or feel or anything like that, popping a Prozac so they can actually tolerate it, wash it down with some Starburst and some Diet Coke?
That is a fundamental, this whole pharmacological psychiatric tyranny is a fundamental aspect of control, because these SSRIs, not only do they destroy cognitive function, but they literally lower the vibratory ebb of the person and make it easier for entities to form an entity attachment and eventually take them up as a host. Because that is the fundamental building block of the reptilian overlordship, is by inserting enough of their DNA into... in the population in general, but these key elite bloodlines in particular, these hybrid people.
Can I stop you there for a second?
Yeah, sure.
Key elite bloodlines. Can you rattle off some names?
The royalty, so-called, the Rothschilds, the House of Windsor, the royal European bloodlines, but the elite all over the world, in China, the people, because what these entities do is they guide them through the whole system. They're kind of pushed and prodded on their way up. Someone could be like a bastard offshoot of an elite bloodline, like the Rockefellers or Rothschilds or whatever the case may be. But there's always a guiding hand to move them through, and they wind up being in high finance. They wind up being in the media, whatever the case may be. So these are the types. But you see them at all strata of society. There's control freaks and sociopaths everywhere you go. Because what the DNA manipulation leads to is a lot of people who are outwardly human, but they have a genetic and a spiritual predisposition to be taken up as a host by these entities. And what I try to get people to think
saying
about
that
is...
Are you saying that there's a sort of like a family relationship between people who get abducted/slash possessed?
Absolutely, because you look at the old term, familiar spirit, family being the operative part of that familiar spirit, because... People are trapped generationally. They're abducted in families, generation after generation after generation. And these entities, because the reptilians use a lot of other entities to do their bidding for them, a lot of the heavy lifting, but you always hear about the Greys, and there's different factions of Greys, Mantis being so on and so forth. They actually work.
Are these all the same things? Like, you know, I hear people talk about Greys, Archons, Demons, Djinn, Mind Parasites. Are they all the same thing or what?
There are, I believe there are expressions of the same thing, of this archontic influence. Just like you and I, are, most everyone is an expression of creation. This is a plane of dualities, and the dualities are becoming more extreme by the nanosecond. So people, are, if you notice, are getting more crazy, or they're becoming more grounded, more centered. And even very metaphysically, spiritually grounded people are having challenging times right now because the sun's going crazy and frequencies are increasing. This is why they're really pulling out all the stops, blasting us with discordant frequencies in the music and beaming us electromagnetically and with cell phone towers and so on and so forth, chem spraying us. So what happens is these entities take up these people who have a genetic predisposition to being a host. And what I like to tell people are serial murderers and child molesters are garden variety versions of the perps and pedos that pollute places like Bohemian Grove, Bilderberg, so on and so forth. Because if you look at like a serial murderer, just as you hear biologists and engineers talk about how form follows function, where serial murders are concerned, psychology follows neurology, which follows genetics. These serial murderers lack frontal lobe capacity. Frontal lobe capacity is our impulse control net. It's what keeps us from acting out impulsively and doing crazy things. And what they've done is scientists have done studies on serial killers, one of them in particular, Joel Rifkin, and they found out that not only do they have are lacking in frontal lobe capacity, but they don't really have control of their extremities, their limbs, their hands, and their body in general. This is a deadly combination because just as mediums and shamans get these downloads, spiritual downloads of insight of someone's past lives or their own past lives, so on and so forth, what these entities do is they download sadistic imagery nonstop into these serial killers, and they play them endlessly in their minds, and they're forced to act out on them. But and because they have...
When you dream, for example, the body secretes a hormone into your body to paralyze you so that you don't act out your dreams. Is this kind of like the opposite of that, where they are actually really starting to act them out? They don't have control of it.
It's a twofold process because in their waking consciousness, a lot of times they will hear like a loud, high-pitched tone in their ear or what sounds like a metallic kind of crunching sound. And then the sadistic imagery starts of torturing women, of killing women, of molesting children. And then when they're asleep, what happens is it's what I call astral dreamscape manipulation, the bait and switch tactic. And if I had more time, I would go into the dynamics and the details of this. But in short, what happens is the entities, they push into the sleeping hybrid, the person they're trying to turn into a serial killer, let's say. And oftentimes they already are taken up or there's already an entity attachment within them. And what they do is once they're inside this sleeping person, they first eroticize their dreams. They make it seem this kind of adult content. I won't go into graphic detail, but they make it seem as if they're about to engage in intercourse with a very attractive woman. And just as they're about to engage in intercourse with this woman, they are sodomized from behind by this reptilian entity. And the person wakes up thinking, oh, that's a strange dream. You know, they just kind of blow it off. But then it happens repetitively, where just as they're about to have intercourse, because it's a parallel psychological manipulation, the virtual environment they find themselves in, but the entities also trigger the arousal mechanism.
Sounds,
so,
That sounds remarkably similar to MKUltra mind control programs work with the sensory deprivation and the bait and switching kind of thing. And that way you can actually split the personality of certain individuals in order to create one personality for, you know, say public life and one personality for private life or military control, super soldiers, etc.
Yeah, so the original mind controllers were these non-human archontic beings, and also the priesthoods and fraternal orders that they worked through.
And ever since Operation Paperclip, we've had like what 10,000 plus psych warfare Nazi scientists working with the CIA and then goodness knows where else.
Yes, because so many of these people that have been turned into serial murderers or people born into satanic covens, it's not only this familiar spirit archontic influence tracks them generationally, and they will even go to the trouble of arranging unions, even one-off one-night stands, just so a particular child is born and another offshoot branch of that particular bloodline is created. What happens is, through all this multi-generational abuse, disassociation occurs, and that creates holes in the auric field. It allows these negative entities to create strongholds in people. I would say that there is no such thing as purely human mind control, because these seemingly human mind controllers themselves have this archontic malign influence working through them.
Yeah. Well, it can't be a human mind control program if all the people in the mind control program that are controlling it are really inhuman.
Is that right? Absolutely.
Okay, well, we're coming to break now. We'll be back shortly, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, James Bartley's website is The Universal's
Universal Seduction.
The Universal
Just type in James
Seduction.
Bartley, Universal Seduction, you'll find it.
Yeah. I thought it was the Universal's Education for a second there. Yeah. I almost got that right. All right, we'll be right back. It's not too far off from the truth, is it? We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com with James Bartley. Don't you go anywhere, folks. That feed came down pretty freaking quickly there, didn't it? Welcome back to the hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. If you're in New Zealand, it's Tuesday through Saturday of those 5 days, because we're broadcasting live from the future. That's why all our reporting is so up to date, allegedly. And my very special guest is James Bartley, and I have this consideration to bestow upon you, if I may. Can we be so certain of anything, considering the huge quantity of mind control, non-human entities, and so on and so forth, technologies, yada, yada? Can we actually be sure of anything really at all, because if we were under mind control, we wouldn't know it?
That's a very good question. What I encourage people to do is to remain heart-centered. The heart is a electromagnetic organ. It pumps out more electromagnetic energy than any part of our body. And when we feel or know the truth, it is an inner knowing. It's a heart vibe. Some people literally feel a pleasant energy pulse in their heart center when they hear something and they recognize it as the truth. And other people, myself included, when we hear something that doesn't sit well with us, that seems to be a falsehood, we likewise get a feeling in our heart center, that a discordant kind of feeling, a discordant kind of energy. So people need to go within, as all the mystics and seers and sages have said all along, and that's why they've gone to such efforts to shunt us into the left side and make everything logical and rational and reductionist. We lose ourselves, because expanded awareness and an expanded consciousness is where we need to be at in order to deal with these kinds of issues. And the more we trust ourselves and the more we listen to that still silent voice within us, I think that the better off we'll be, because thinking is too slow, mind is too slow. We have to get back to expanded consciousness, expanded awareness. And there's a lot of ways to do that, a lot of safe ways to do that. There's a lot of, like, Eastern religions that have been set up, and the Western religions too, have been set up as basically defaults and traps by these archontic influences. Many people that go to these Eastern cults where there's gurus and whatnot find out that they're anything but love and light, that they're archontically controlled and reptilian controlled. Again, it goes back to trusting ourselves and going within for the answers. That would be my answer.
Intuition, which means tuition from within, you know, you got to teach yourself. And yes. I have this also crystallized form of vision of mine, is that I can instinctively tell when I'm doing something wrong, you know, like if I'm talking to somebody who's a bit of a douchebag or a scumbag or some other form of bag, I'll actually feel bad about it. Even if I'm not doing anything bad, I'll just be talking to this person and just kind of like almost like my teeth are grinding sort of thing. Like they make me feel tense. Is this some kind of like it. A proper reaction to these scumbaggery entities that we're talking about here?
It is because it's all about vibration and resonance. I first realized I had an ability to sense the presence of unseen entities, negative entities, as well as sense the presence of negative entities within people, hybrid hosts. And this came about because I was in a six-hour car ride with somebody, and I was as far away from this person as I could be, just clutching onto the armchair at the opposite end of the small car, gripping it tightly, and my forearms were tensed up, my biceps were tensed up. I felt like my heart center was being attacked. I was feeling like foggy-headed and almost in a fugue state. And I realized later that this person was indeed an entity, had an entity within him, because long story short, this entity one night astrally projected out to me, entered my dreamscape, tried to sodomize me. Long story, I fought it off. But it's kind of the things that happen to people that work with these issues. But then it dawned on me, that's why I was all tensed up and why my muscles were tensing up, why my heart chakra felt like it was being under assault, because the entity next to me was parasitically feeding off my energy. You always hear about, oh, this person is an energy drain, he's an energy vampire. Well, there's something to that, because it's all about piraticism, energetic vampirism. And you listen to all these quaint sayings from the past. Oh, that person is starting to get under my skin. Or, what's gotten into you, right? Those are like quaint sayings, but they have a basis in reality. Where do they come from? In the old days, also in indigenous societies, they were well-versed in how to deal with and how to recognize the malign influence of these archontic entities, seen or unseen. So what you were doing was you were reacting properly to a negative influence.
Now, we've had discussions about archons and psychopaths, and that they seem to be similar things. And what came out of those conversations is that they're actually infectious. You can actually become one of them if you come into contact for too long, and accept that kind of thing. Now, that sounds an awful lot like demon possession. Now, I've got two convictions for possession, but it's not a demon entity related charge. And I was just wondering, what part does drug consumption have to play with possession?
I'm glad you brought that up. One need not have an overabundance of reptilian DNA to be taken up as a host by these entities or demonic entities in general. All one needs to do is imbibe in certain drugs, in particular crystal meth and a variant of that in America. It's known as crank. Crystal meth is a fast track to being taken up as a host by these entities because the drug has a sympathetic frequency with these negative entities. And I had a friend who worked in a state hospital in California where the criminally insane were kind of lodged in these places. And she used to work and sit in group sessions with what they call tweakers, all these meth heads. And privately amongst themselves, they will say that I had all these voices in my head telling me, you know, to do all these horrible things. I had these voices in my head telling me to go onto these child porn sites. I had all these voices in my head. And also, when you study the criminal files of meth heads, you will see a commonality of berserk behavior, of mayhem, of out of control violence. In San Diego, when I was living there, there was a couple of meth heads in East County, San Diego. They were babysitting the young girl of the sister of the woman. There was a woman and her boyfriend, and the woman had a sister, and they were babysitting the little girl of her sister. And long story short, they were on a daily basis horrendously abusing this little girl. And eventually they ran the taps in the bathtub, filled it up with boiling, scalding water, and dropped the poor baby in there. The baby died. The skin came off of it. It was burned, scalded right off. And these two were tweakers. They were crank heads. And when I saw them on TV being arraigned in court, you could look right in their faces. It's lights are on, but nobody's home, right? Flatness of effect. There's whatever is in there, it was not human. So long story short is certain drugs, crystal meth, which is another reason why crystal meth is so prevalent and why it's so widespread in Western society. It's a fast track being taken up.
The police in a number of countries are involved heavily, heavily distributing this out to the population.
Absolutely, absolutely. And steroids also. People wonder why cops are so crazy
roid,
that they fly off
suffer from roid rage real badly. It's because they're on the roids.
But I'm absolutely convinced that the police forces in the Western world are the outward manifestation, the public face, if you will, of this reptilian overlordship. They specifically recruit people with a low IQ who fit a psychological profile because, once again, psychology follows neurology, which follows genetics. Their reptilian demonic familiars goad them into becoming wanting to join the police forces because these people are essentially control freaks. And once they get into the police forces in the training, I'm sure they do it. They're taught to shoot dogs all the time like the army does. And what this does is it feeds the reptilian bloodlust. You will see when you've studied the lives of serial murderers that many of them at an early age were killing furry animals. It's bad enough that a lot of kids kill amphibians, toads, frogs, what have you. But a lot of these serial killers at an early age developed the bloodlust for killing furry animals, cats, dogs, squirrels, whatever the case may be. So these people get into the police force, these people that are already full-on hybrids to begin with, reptilian hybrids, they fit into that profile. And the killing, especially of dogs, becomes an addiction because killing and torturing and maiming for sadists is an addiction. And that's why they do it. That's why they fly off the handle. I'm sorry, officer, was I doing anything wrong? Boom, they're set upon, and it's like a pack of hyenas. It's like a shark feeding frenzy. They set upon that poor person, shoot all the dogs, and it goes on and on and on because it's an act of domination. What they want to do is create that fear vibe, put everybody ill at ease, and it's an act of domination. It's like when the cities didn't submit to the Romans and they eventually took over and sacked the town, they would kill all the cattle, kill all the dogs, and the people that they didn't kill, they would sell into slavery. It's very similar to that.
It sounds an awful lot like what I've been saying for a couple of weeks now. Like, I've had the realization there's only actually really three groups of people in society that I actually really truly fear. One being the gangs, yes. The second being the cops, which are incidentally a gang, and the third being judges. And the things that tie them all together is they all use deception. None of them have respect for the rule of law. And in the case of just police and gangs, they're very prone to completely unprovoked violence. And that's why I get terrified of cops and gang members approaching my car, and you know, you see these judges come out in their black Masonic robes, and they sit down, and everybody's like, "All rise, worship the judge." And I'm like, hold on a second, are we in Solomon's fucking temple here? What is going on, bro? What is going on?
It's the court of Saturn. Yeah, that's the whole idea. Is this attitude of domination and control, and there's a hive consciousness at work where they all resonate and they all vibe to the same vibration of anger, of rage, and they want to promote that fear. To get an idea of what the reptilian mindset is all about, please allow me to read just a short paragraph from a book written by Roy Hazelwood, who was the original FBI profiler, what was then known as the Behavioral Sciences Unit. And this will give the listeners an idea of what these elite so-called serial killers are all about, and what the garden variety serial killers and child pedophiles, pedos, are all about. This was written by someone named Mike DeBartolaban. And Mike DeBartolaban was a serial killer, and he was a sadist, who was arrested by the American Secret Service because he was counterfeiting. And when they raided his house, they found all these videos of him torturing his wife. And so they passed on all these videos to Roy Hazelwood in the Behavioral Sciences Unit. And this is a written creed that Mike DeBartolaban wrote. And here it is: sadism. The wish to inflict pain on others is not the essence of sadism. The central impulse is to have complete mastery over another person, to make him or her a helpless object of our will, to become the absolute ruler over her, to become her god, to do with her as one pleases are means to this end, and the most radical aim is to make her suffer, since there is no greater power over another than that of inflicting pain on her, to force her to undergo suffering without her being able to defend herself. The pleasure is in the complete domination of another person is the very essence of the sadistic drive. And that's what they're all about. And just to complete a thought earlier about the astral dreamscape manipulation, after the person is sodomized by the reptilian, when they think they're about to put the blocks to what they believe is a sexy woman in their astral dreamscape, oftentimes simultaneous to being sodomized, the object of their desires, the woman, morphs into something like repulsive, their own sister, their own mother, a small child, some weird hermaphroditic he-she creature, whatever the case may be, something visually repulsive in conjunction with being sodomized. And when this happens enough, because they will continue to do this until their aims are achieved, the person begins to develop a cognitive association between regular heterosexual intercourse and anal pain, sodomy pain. And this is why you find so many serial murderers who are impotent. They cannot get an erection. This is why, for example, Ted Bundy used to masturbate over the skulls of his victims. This is why someone like John Wayne Gacy, there was a kid who had this interesting hobby. He became pen pals pre-internet days with all these serial killers, one of whom was John Wayne Gacy, and he visited John Wayne Gacy in prison, managed to be alone with him in a room with John Wayne Gacy, and it was probably the first time John Wayne Gacy, who'd murdered over 30 boys, had been alone with a boy since his incarceration began. No sooner was John Wayne Gacy alone in this room with this boy that He began threatening to strangle him. He threatened to sodomize him and make him bleed all over the floor. And Gacy began trying to fondle himself, but to no result because he was impotent once again. Incidentally, that kid also...
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Maybe that's a poor choice of words. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Don't you touch that boy. I mean that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the most operatic 2 hours in talk radio. We like to have a few laughs, and as far as I know, there's nothing that really ticks off demonic scumbaggery entities than people having a good time, showing a little bit of love and showing a little bit of humour. They think humour is laughing at somebody when they fall. No, that's called schadenfreude, yo. That ain't funny. That's pain that you're laughing at in some kind of sadistic, pleasurey way. And it's not cool, man. You got to have a little bit of empathy for people and laugh at things because they're true, not because they're painful. Right? Unless this is my perspective on it. I could be wrong. James, welcome back. Finishing your thought, who was Richard Ramirez? You were talking about this boy who was a pen pal of a number of psychopaths. And who's Richard Ramirez?
Richard Ramirez was the night stalker of Los Angeles. He would creep into people's homes and, rape and kill them. He would shoot them with a .44 Magnum. The reason they call him the night stalker was, well, he did that. Also, it turned out that he was a big AC/DC fan. He would always play Night Prowler from the Heaven and Hell album. So, anyway, what happened with this kid was he began corresponding with Richard Ramirez. And no sooner had he started doing that than Richard Ramirez began astrally projecting into the boy's astral dreamscape and, in the boy's own words, tried to strangle him. But I think he probably tried to do more than that, probably tried to sodomize him while he was at it. One of the things that these entities do, these familiars, is they goad the psychopaths, sociopaths, and serial killers they are working through into ritualism, into the occult. And you will find this commonality amongst many serial killers. Within law enforcement, it's been covered up for a long time that many serial killers were, in fact, i.e. devil worshippers, ritualists, and so on and so forth. Jeffrey Dahmer was one. He tried to build himself a temple made out of human body parts. And Richard Ramirez was one. When he was in court, he held his hand out and he had a pentagram, an inverted pentagram, drawn in his hand. He's just one example. And these entities, they work through these people. If one studies the lives and careers, if you want to call it, these serial murderers, they will often talk about these entities. They will often draw sketches of these entities. Ted Bundy, for example, said at an early age, scaly monsters were coming out of his closet. Now, those who study alien abduction research know that entities, frequently reptilians, create portal entries out of the closet. This is where the old stories of the boogeymen coming out of the closets come from. Another person was Dennis Rabbit. He was known as the Southside Rapist of St. Louis. He raped over 100 women. I saw a doco with him, a documentary, and he drew sketches of these winged demon entities that were coming and messing with him. Glenn Rogers' brother, Glenn Rogers was a serial killer. And in a documentary his brother made, his brother said, well, the reason I turned my brother in is because that wasn't my brother anymore. He'd left a long time ago. So at a very deep level, Glenn Rogers' brother knew that these entities had taken his brother over. Richard Trenton Chase was known as the vampire killer of Sacramento. Richard Trenton Chase was getting these voices in his head telling him that if he did not drink fresh blood, human blood, on a daily basis, his blood would turn into powder. So Richard Trenton Chase would go into people's homes, kill them, and drink their blood, and all because he kept thinking that his blood would turn into powder. And this ties in also with the drug abuse, because many people are goaded by these familiar entities to imbibe in certain drugs. Crank and crystal meth, like we were talking about before. People don't realize how pervasive this archontic influence is are in their life. Any kind of home where there is domestic strife, a lot of violence, is a haven for these kinds of entities, because they feed off the rage of the perpetrator, and they also feed off the helplessness and fear of the victim. And a lot of these women who have been partners of these crystal meth heads, who have been taken up by multiple entities at times, not just one, they say that when their boyfriends or their partners get very violent, very angry, their eyes literally start to grow. The glow, red or yellow are very common colors, or their faces start to morph and shapeshift, right? Or when they're having sex with these people, suddenly they start to become very, very aggressive, and they start to get into very violent, perverse forms of sex, such as sadomasochism, bondage, discipline. Sometimes they will even begin to shapeshift during sex. What some of these people who have been on crystal meth have said, that when they've been having intercourse with somebody, that they step out of the body and go on the sidelines, if you will, and the entity that has been working through them fully takes over, and they watch from the sidelines as their body is having intercourse with somebody. This is something that serial murderers also say, that some of them say that right before I started killing her, I came out of my body and I stepped aside and I watched as the monster began killing and strangling this woman. And that's how it works. These entities fully take over. And so when we're dealing with the global elite, we must remember outwardly they appear to be normal, but I would say that there are physical characteristics. Many of these serial killers and many of these elitist perps have marked facial characteristics which mark them as a reptilian hybrid, eyes sunk deep in the eye sockets, pronounced cheekbones, angular face. I mean, just look at Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, as an example, and look at some of these other perps, these high-level perps. They all seem to look alike, like they're hatchlings or something. But that's a direct function of the reptilian DNA. And people have to remember that we're dealing with an archontic influence, using these people as a physical medium with which to affect their change and promote their agenda in our physical plane.
Now, in terms of psychology and attempting to understand the minds of serial killers and so on and so forth, is there any actual knowledge within the psychological community about these non-human entities of which you speak, or are they simply trying to use reductionist nonsense in order to explain away and just say, oh, this is just the way it is?
Yeah, there are two sides of that coin. You have the control system, where anyone who even mentions these subjects, the first thing they want to do is put them on SSRIs and then throw them into a loony bin. And then the extreme version of that, you have like the false memory syndrome types, who themselves are perps, who try to say that any suggestion that these adults are remembering accurately, memories of childhood abuse, especially ritual abuse, is valid, i.e. false memory. And then you have that element of the therapeutic counseling community, and some of them are psychologists, who know very well that satanic ritual abuse, mind control, and demonic possession exist. And they do their level best behind the scenes to work with people, help them reintegrate, help them regain equilibrium and inner harmony, and more power to those people. They're doing a great job. It's a very difficult job what they're doing. And what I object to are all these people in the mind control truth community, if you will, who present themselves as healers or deprogrammers, and they are anything but. Because there are some people out there, I won't name any names, but they are well known for actually triggering the suicide programming of some of these MKUltra Monarch survivors, satanic ritual abuse survivors, triggering not only panic attacks and anxiety attacks, but full-on suicide programming. So people really have to be wary of who they go to seek help when they're having these issues. And there is a demonic element. And while I'm on the subject, I must say it's probably going to upset some people, but so be it. When many of these satanic ritual abuse survivors, mind control survivors, start to break programming and look for help, very often they wind up going to like a Christian pastor, Christian minister, a fundy, as I call them, a fundamentalist. And initially, these pastors, almost invariably they're male, or these reverends, or whatever the case may be. They start out sounding sympathetic, telling the woman, because usually it's women who seek help, and it's usually women who are the whistleblowers. They tell these women initially, you know, I'm here to help you, and I'm sorry for what you've gone through. It's terrible, et cetera, et cetera. Before too long, that old, harsh, patriarchal predestination, original sin programming kicks in, and then they start telling the woman that you brought this upon yourself. You know, it's all this sin that you had. It's just the way you've lived. It's because you haven't given yourself to God, to Jesus, so on and so forth. Burn all your journals. And oftentimes their journals has all this detail about the experiences they've had. All those past life memories in the journals that you've written about in detail, they're all satanic. Burn them all up. Get rid of your crystals. Get rid of anything that had to do with your past. And basically, they disempower these people, and they victimize them again. And this happens over and over again. And these people who start off being wanting to be helpers or healers, these do-gooders, they become part of the problem instead of being part of the solution. And these people that are breaking programming, seeking help, they really must go with their heart center and go with what their heart vibe tells them. Some people can help them. Some of these Christian oriented people can help them up to a point, but there's going to be aspects of demonic possession, entity attachment, mind control.
It stands to reason that if somebody can be programmed, if somebody can be possessed, then surely there must be methodologies that are effective. Where you Absolutely. Can exercise said demon or deprogram Absolutely. Said person. Have you got any examples or case studies or things of that nature?
Well, Fritz Springmeier, I'm sure you're familiar with him. He wrote
spoken to him a number of times. Yeah.
Yeah, classic books about identifying a monarch mind controlled person and ways to help deprogram them. So there are ways to do it, but one must be very careful. I don't know how to deprogram people. I don't know. I've always wanted to be a hypnotherapist. It's in my things to do list. I haven't gotten around to do it yet. But when I talk to these people, I'm very careful of how I interact with them, my demeanor, my tone of voice. I'm careful not to say things that may be triggering, that may engender an anxiety or panic attack. And a lot of people don't know these things. They just pull things out of the hat and say things that can really freak these people out. So yes, absolutely. There's a lot of people that have gone out there and have deprogrammed and helped these people reintegrate, more power to them. And I think what's happening is some of the alters are beginning to merge, and that could be good. It could be bad. From the good standpoint is when the alters begin to merge more with the front alter, the person begins to have more control, and they begin to recognize the things that trigger alters. They begin to recognize when they're leaving their normal consciousness. And it's so insidious these days, Vinny. There are a lot of television programs that have all these subs in them, subliminals, which are designed specifically to trigger people into going into altered states and trigger people into going into altered personas. That happens all the time in cinema, on TV, and people have to be aware of that. And there are a lot of people in these truth communities who are going around triggering people and mind controlling people. So, yes, the ability to deprogram and heal does exist. And more power to those people that are doing that work. It's important.
Now, I spoke to Dr. Mark Circus, who has been trying to heal sexually abused people, particularly women. And what he shared with me, I thought, was quite poignant, in that when a psychiatrist or psychologist or whatever tries to treat you and they don't really know what they're doing with this kind of thing, they say, oh, that's a problem, you need to ignore that, here's this drug, so on and so forth. But what Mark does is he gets them to expand on it and tell it more and more again and again, and in fact try to absorb all of that negativity, all of that angst, all of that pain, fear, frustration, etc., and then try and tell them stories from his own life where he's experienced pain and so on and so forth. And in that intense empathy, where you actually start to feel the pain of the victim itself, and they know and they can see you feeling their pain, it starts to kind of break up this solid mass of trauma that has been weighing them down and holding them back for so very long. And it occurs to me that it's a shamanic practice of the wounded healer, as it were. You cannot heal these people unless you have been through something similar so that you can actually relate to and feel all of that pain that they're going through. And the difficulty is very few people are capable of experiencing this pain and trauma and such like that and recover from it, let alone recover from it and then want to go straight back into it to bring others out of the void with you.
Well, there's an old saying, sorrow is the pathway to the soul, and one needs to have empathy and compassion. It also helps to have gone through some of these experiences so that they can relate at a very deep level to the people.
Yeah,
I hear the music coming on, so...
Yeah, indeed. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Final segment coming right up.
Yeah, yeah, and no one like me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Congratulations, you made it.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final segment here with James Bartley. And, recovering from trauma is a real hard thing. And I've experienced quite a few traumas in my life. I mean, getting arrested, frack! Oh, my God! When they cut my greenstone that my mother gave off me, like in New Zealand culture, you know, taking somebody's greenstone off them is like cutting them off from their protection, from darkness and the spirit world kind of thing. And when you're inside a police cell and they cut it off you with scissors, it's like, I don't know, have you ever seen those movies like in Ghostbusters where the city authorities let loose all the ghosts out of their containment field kind of thing?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're surrounded by all this demons and ghosts and scary stuff that slimes you and eats your hot dogs. You know, there was that kind of thing, and it just kind of like it was like a thousand dark entities just kind of like pushing through the every fiber of my being, and then my legs gave out on me. I was kind of like collapsed to the ground, started vomiting, and had like my very first panic attack in my life, and I've never recovered from that experience to a large degree. You know, I've only been able to avoid getting into those kind of situations again, and that's basically the best I've been able to do, because nobody so far has been able to take the time and had the experience to kind of like counsel me and get rid of that trauma, because it takes so long. That's another thing that Dr. Mark Circus told me about, is that getting over these kind of traumas ain't something you can do in an afternoon. It's something that takes weeks and weeks and hours a day in order to get over it in a lot of cases. And that's for real hardcore trauma. I don't know how long it's going to take me to get over mine. I mean, I'm still afraid of being employed to this day because of trauma that I suffered in workplaces, you know. I've developed employophobia, which I think is actually a healthy defense mechanism against winding up going to work for our contact entities. But, yeah.
I agree. You're unemployable. Nothing wrong with that. What people have to understand is that this trauma is deep-seated. And the really good therapists, hypnotherapists, and so forth, they not only can get somebody down into hypnotic regression so they relive the experiences and remember more if that's what the person wants to do, but they also are able, the hypnotherapists are also able to safely remove, release the blocked traumatic energy. Because when these people are abused, some of them beginning at an early age, that traumatic energy stays locked in their body and creates all kind of energy meridian blockages. It creates all these physical and psychological issues. It needs to be safely released. And the best way to do that with a skilled regressionist is to allow the person to abreact and relive the body memories and relive the activity and whatnot that went with those feelings and emotions, and then thereby safely release it. The person will feel a lot better afterwards if it's done correctly. It's a very therapeutic modality. Now, when I talk to people, because I don't have this ability to hypnotize anybody, I intuitively know when they're kind of skirting around a certain issue, but it's something that they want to talk about or want to delve into, but shame and embarrassment holds them back. And to a degree, we are all shame-based individuals. We all have that wounded inner child, golden inner child within us. So once we get past the shame, that's a big part of the recovery process. Me, in the past, it didn't matter what kind of degrading, humiliating, painful things the reptilians did to me. I would write about it. I wouldn't give a toss, right? I would do it anyway because I knew that I was not anyone special or unique. If the reptilians and other ETs did these things to me, I cannot be the only one they did it to. Therefore, if I wrote about it, and sometimes in embarrassing, painful detail, I knew it was going to resonate with someone else out there. And so when I'm talking to somebody and I intuitively feel that they're kind of skirting around a certain issue, I will just take the leap and talk about what I feel they're reluctant to talk about and talk about it in a clinical fashion. Yeah, these things have happened to me and here's how I dealt with it. The goal, at least part of the goal, is to reduce the recovery time from these experiences, abduction experiences, for example. One shouldn't be destabilized and disrupted for days, weeks, and months on end after an experience. To be sure, some people have more experiences than others, but in general, if we can, as alien abductees, regain our inner harmony, regain our balance in a relatively short period of time, that in itself prevents us from being manipulated even more because they like us in a fearful, paranoid state because it's easier for them to manipulate us that way. Also,
which is
the
not
fear of
entirely, which is not entirely dissimilar to police abductees.
Yeah. Well, it's essentially the same archontic influence that's working through them. And you mentioned the sexual aspect. I'm glad you did. Over the time I have, one of the things that the reptilians do is it seems to be a big thing with them is rape human women. And this has a double stigma. Women who are raped, and that, what are the statistics nowadays? 1 out of 3, 1 out of 4 women have been sexually assaulted at one point in their lives or more, and oftentimes when they're children. So on the one hand, they're being raped. On the other hand, they're being raped by a non-human entity. So there's a double stigma, a shame-based response, fear of ridicule, so on and so forth. What these entities do, they're masters of frequency and resonance. They can densify themselves. They can be invisible in the visible spectrum, but still leave a depression of weight on a mattress. The woman could feel a weight on her chest as she's being raped, but not see anything physically. The woman could have layers of bedding and bed clothes, and yet the entity somehow densifies its member in order to vaginally or anally rape her through layers of bed clothing. And if the woman is even able to move her hands or arms, she may try to block the said member. But paradoxically, she feels nothing when she tries to block this thing, but she feels it within her. And sometimes the entity will make itself visible. It can assume the guise of a ex-lover, ex-boyfriend, maybe assume the guise of a woman, of a guy the woman has a crush with, some guy she's seen in the laundromat in the apartment complex, for example.
Or, sounds very similar to the ancient Greek stories of Zeus turning himself into a bull and raping a woman, and that woman giving birth to Hercules.
Absolutely. And look at the case of Alexander the Great. His mother was a member of the Dionysian cult, and she said that Zeus had taken the form of a serpent and impregnated her, and voila, we have Alexander. Same thing with Caesar. His mother was supposedly impregnated by an incubus, a reptilian incubus, and then Caesar came into being. So these kinds of stories go back into antiquity. And then getting back to the reptilian rape, or the reptilian can choose to manifest in it in all its scaly glory for the express purpose of instilling fear and terror with a woman because it feeds off that. And there is an energetic process where the woman's kundalini is activated, and it forcefully works its way up through all her chakras, and she has powerful full-body orgasms. And this results in a heightened libido for a short period of time. After these reptilian rapes, she could be very psychic, very intuitive. But then, you know, the whole shame feedback loop kicks in because their libido is so activated, they almost want the reptilian to come back, and they feel all shameful about that, right? Or they act out
like
other
Stockholm,
ways.
Stockholm syndrome.
Yes, yes, but it's because the kundalini and the sexual arousal mechanism, libido, has been amplified to such a degree. Or they resort to constant self-gratification, i.e. masturbation. And from the male standpoint, this is where porn kicks in, because porn is a fundamental aspect of the archontic reptilian control system. This is why so many males are emasculated to one degree or another. They don't know how to interact with women. They become emasculated. We see it even at a young age, where there's a circle of kids standing around videotaping a poor kid being bullied. Instead of, like in my day, me and my mates would have jumped in and, like, you know, opened a can of whoop ass to the bullies. Right? Nowadays, they stand and they watch as the poor kid gets victimized. That's their way of interacting, because they're from the video generation. They're from the MTV generation. They've been taught to disengage from life.
When you see people killed in front of you, you know, it's entertainment. You know,
it's entertainment.
It isn't a real human anymore.
No, it's not.
You know,
it's
unfortunately,
an abstraction.
Unfortunately, we've really come to the end of the show here. The universalseduction.com is James's website, ladies and gentlemen. James Bartley, Bartley, the universalseduction.com is the website. James, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you,
Vinny. I hope you appreciated it, bro. I certainly did.
Great show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, nothing like talking about demon penis in the morning in order to make you feel spicy. Now, we will be... We'll see you tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, for the very first ever, hopefully, three-hour edition of the Vinny Eastwood Show. So, you know, stay tuned for that one, ladies and gentlemen. 5 till 7 Central, 10 a.m. till 10 a.m. New Zealand time, 6 p.m. Eastern, and 11 p.m. GMT. We will see you then. Hopefully, you'll be listening live at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.